Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando's stroller rentals. And a Disney-featured stroller vendor. Welcome back to the show, David.
Well, thanks. Good to be back for round two.
So last week we spent our time talking about Shanghai, and you gave us a really nice overview, land by land, of your experiences there. But there are a couple of things that are sort of overall Shanghai park issues that we didn't really talk about. And the biggest of those, and probably the one that we're all sort of most interested in hearing about, are the sort of larger park entertainment aspects. I know that when we've talked previously with folks who have visited overseas parks, you know, shows are kind of an interesting mixed bag in some ways, because on the one hand, there are some shows that are harder to experience because of the language barrier. But then on the other hand, a lot of the overseas parks have done a really great job with the nighttime entertainment that doesn't really rely on narration so much. So tell us a little bit about what the nighttime entertainment was like at Shanghai and kind of what you thought of it.
Well, surprisingly, you know, I've been to Tokyo in the past, and they kind of go overboard with the parades. I counted the parades one day, 5 parades in one day. So wow. I was kind of expecting the same from Shanghai. And surprisingly, they go completely the other direction. There's only one parade every day, and it's an afternoon parade.
Interesting. So not even a nighttime spectacular.
Yeah,
type
the only nighttime entertainment they have at all is a fireworks show.
Okay.
There's no nighttime parade. There's no nighttime equivalent to Fantasmic or anything like that. I imagine at some point it'll be coming. You know, they definitely have, you know, the infrastructure there for it. I noticed there's a, you know, very well laid out parade route, very long parade route. So I can't imagine that other parades won't be added down the line.
Sure.
But the one parade they have right now, it's a kind of an interesting theme. The name is escaping me right now, but the entire parade is train based. So all the floats kind of have something to do with the train. Like, of course, the first one is the engine of the train, and that features, you know, Engineer Mickey kind of leading okay. off
so
everything.
So I believe this is the Mickey Storybook Express Parade.
That would be it, yes. You have better notes than I do up on this, apparently. Yeah, and, you know, there's nothing amazing about this parade. It's not Paint the Night or anything like that, but you know, it's a nice different parade. I'd equate it most closely probably to Soundsational at Disneyland. Okay. You know, there's nothing super grand about it, but it's also not a bad parade. I don't want to short sell it. It's just, you know, nothing amazing.
So I'm trying to remember, you haven't seen Festival of Fantasy at Walt Disney World, have you?
No, I have. I've seen that a
couple
of times.
Oh, you have? Okay. So how would you compare it to Festival of Fantasy?
I wouldn't put it quite on that level. Okay. Festival of Fantasy, I really, really like. I mean, most notably because of just that last dragon float, which is amazing.
Sure.
There's nothing quite that impressive in this parade, but it's a solid entry as far as, you know, daytime parades go.
Okay.
Yeah, you didn't seem to really have to show up early for it or anything. You know, viewing parades just didn't seem to be a priority for the park crowd there. So, I mean, once the parade started, sure, people, you know, rushed towards the route and crowded in, but we could easily find a spot, you know, 5-10 minutes before the parade came by. Wow. It wasn't a problem at all. Yeah, I was quite surprised at that.
And you can't do that in a U.S. park, let alone a park that we've been hearing all along is, you know, going to be this big problem to accommodate, you know, the crowd density.
Yeah, I mean, the parade route, like I mentioned before, it's super long, kind of like at Magic Kingdom. So I think that helps.
Sure.
You know, with alleviating the crowd density. And there are just a lot of really open, wide spaces along the parade routes. I mean, obviously designed with crowds in mind, which probably makes it seem less crowded than it is.
Sure.
So
makes it easier to find a good spot with a decent vantage point, too.
Yeah. And I mean, part of this may just be a cultural thing where, you know, Disney is new to Shanghai. They don't know what to expect. So they don't know that parades are a thing. You know, maybe in the coming years, as they get more accustomed to it, it'll become what the other parks are.
Sure.
You know, people start scouting out, you know, half an hour beforehand, whatever.
Well, I mean, it is an afternoon parade, not a big over the top light parade kind of thing.
Sure. I mean, if they ever add Paint the Night there, I'd imagine it might be a different story.
Right.
Fireworks were a bit of a different story. We actually ended up not ever watching the fireworks from the park just because we, it was late nights. We were still a bit jet lagged. So we ended up on our final night watching them from like a terrace at the Disneyland Hotel. It's positioned perfectly just directly across the lake. You have a good view of the massive castle fortress. And, you know, the castle is so big that you can actually see the projections, you know, from the hotel.
Very nice. So it sounds like vantage point wise, it's pretty similar to maybe what you would get from like the beach at the Polynesian.
Yeah, I'd equate it to that. Puzzlingly, they have made the decision not to pipe in the music at the hotel.
Okay.
You can get it if you're inside your room on the TV, but you know, half the rooms just by the way buildings are laid out don't face the fireworks.
Right. Well, that's very interesting because, you know, I mean, I guess that makes a certain amount of sense in the, if they're going to pipe the music into the rooms, it seems silly not to pipe it into a public viewing area, unless the whole point is that they don't really want to provide that as a bonus for people who aren't actually staying at the hotel.
That could be, although if memory serves, I think to even get onto that part of the grounds, you have to have a room key. No, I take that back. You could walk through the hotel and out to the terrace.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. It puzzled me too.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the answer, I mean, that would make a certain amount of sense, right? Is that they wouldn't want people, basically they want to be able to sell that view, and the only way you can sell or not the only way, but one of the ways you can sell that view is that, you know,
you can get that view from your room
when you pay for the theme park view and you pay, you get the music in your room.
Sure. Yeah. That could very well be it. Truthfully, I think, you know, it's still just, there are certain things they didn't think about when building, you know,
okay.
Still a new park.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's there in the future.
Okay.
But going back to the show itself, it's actually probably the least impressive fireworks show I've ever seen.
Really?
It was maybe 15 minutes long. And I mean, my wife accurately described it as a castle projection show with a few fireworks. The fireworks were very minimal. You know, she even made the joke, you know, we walked away early before it was even over. And she made the joke as we were walking away that somebody needs to tell them they invented fireworks here.
Oh, I was just going to say, it baffles me that the place that invented fireworks has an unimpressive fireworks show.
Yeah, it was just, it was lame. There's no other word for it. The projections were great, but, you know, again, it was just scenes from movies on the castle. So, I don't know. Maybe that'll be addressed in the future.
Yeah, you would hope.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I was happy that we never devoted the time to the park to, you know,
right,
to stay in the park to watch them after seeing them. It's a little disappointing.
Yeah.
But if you can't think of anything else that might.
Well, I'm just curious, were there any other stage shows or anything like that were worth paying attention to at all?
There weren't really any stage shows in Shanghai, other than the ones I mentioned in part one. There was a little Baymax thing.
Right. That exercise show.
Yeah. And there were a couple of, there was the Jack Sparrow show and the Tarzan show, which I mentioned. I think I covered all the other entertainment in that.
Okay.
In the first part, we just forgot the parade and fireworks.
Right. Right. All right. So now you're going to be moving from Shanghai to Hong Kong. Talk a little bit about that internal sort of transfer piece. You were a little nervous about the shuttle service that they offered to the resort. So you'd booked private transportation from the airport to the hotel there in Shanghai. Did you rely on the resort transportation to get you back to the airport, or were you back to private service again?
No, we booked the car service round trip.
Oh, okay.
Just the information on the shuttle was so sketchy that we didn't want to risk it. We just wanted that part to go smoothly. And truthfully, this was the part I think I was the most nervous about, even more than the flight from the U.S. to China and China back to the U.S., just because this was entirely going to be foreign airports.
Right.
There was, potentially no English anywhere. So it turned out not to be the case. English has become kind of, de facto a world standard. So there are English signs, I think, in most major airports.
Sure.
And that turned out to be the case here. There were differences in the way the airlines work that caused us some concern. We flew on an airline called China Eastern, which apparently has very, very strict carry-on baggage guidelines listed on their website that they stress are very strictly enforced. You get one personal item and just one personal item.
So not one personal item plus the carry-on.
And that carry-on item has to weigh less than 11 pounds.
Ooh, wow.
Which is not a lot.
That's tight.
Yeah, we struggled to get everything packed the way we needed it to be so that we just had our little, laptop bags or purses or whatever, and that there was nothing super heavy in them. And it turned out that almost everybody we saw getting on the plane had, probably more carry-ons than you see in American airports. So it obviously wasn't enforced in any way.
But, right. So big talk, but no real enforcement.
Exactly. I mean, people,
which I'm sure everybody in China knows, but foreigners don't.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, we got on the plane.
And you got on the plane and all the other travelers were pointing and going, ah, ha, 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 silly foreigners.
Yeah. Only bringing one bag.
Right. Right.
But yeah, it's just a short little 2-hour flight down to Hong Kong. No issues at all there. Nothing I can think of to talk about there. We had to go through customs, of course, since Hong Kong, like I mentioned before, has its own governmental system.
Right,
so you're
right.
Technically entering a different country. Much less restrictive than going into Shanghai, obviously, because it's, not a communist country. They're a little less restrictive there. No real issues there. It turned out that whole leg of the flight turned out to be a non-issue.
Good, good. And so, again, were you using any kind of resort transportation or again, private transportation from the airport to Hong Kong Disneyland?
We were using a resort transportation. They had a very clearly laid out shuttle that you could reserve, just through the hotel. It was an official Disney shuttle, so we felt safe doing that. So we set that up. It was really inexpensive. I mean, by American standards, it was something like $30 round trip for all three of us.
Oh, wow. That's not bad at all.
Yeah, which we thought was going to be a shared shuttle and we'd be waiting around on it. And no, as soon as we got there, they walked us down to the shuttle and it turned out just to be us on the shuttle. And
oh, wow. So you ended up with a private shuttle after all.
Yeah, essentially. And we, we left as soon as we got on and we're at Hong Kong Disneyland in about 20 minutes.
That's nice.
So, that was great.
So talk about your accommodations in Hong Kong and just give us that overview. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the check-in process there. And I know we had a little bit of a surprise at check-in. So,
yeah. Well, we, like I mentioned before, we stayed at the Hong Kong Disneyland Hotel. And if you just look at this hotel from the outside, you would swear you were at Disney World. It looks just like the Grand Floridian.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw some pictures I posted online. It's very, very similar. I'd have to go and compare pictures to see if it's identical or not.
But right, right.
Very close. Just kind of that whole, you know, kind of not Victorian. Is Victorian the right word?
Yeah,
right,
it is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah. Kind of, you know, white with a reddish orange roof, Victorian era. And inside was just stunning. I mean, I've never been inside the Grand Floridian, so I can't compare, but just opulent. That's the only word I can say to describe it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it's the Hong Kong Disneyland Hotel when you posted the photos, and I didn't immediately get the Grand Floridian vibe from it, but is that the one that had the funky glass sculpture chandeliers, or was that in Shanghai?
That was Shanghai.
Okay.
And I think we both mentioned in the last podcast, it reminded us of some of the Disney cruise ships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was more Art Deco style there.
Right, right.
But this was just more, you know, classic Victorian. And we both preferred this hotel immensely out of the two.
Okay. Well, so beautiful, opulent hotel, Grand Floridian style. As I recall, you felt like the pricing, though, was really, you know, pretty reasonable for what it was.
It was. I didn't break the cost of the hotel room out by night, but let me just describe the package that we booked and tell you the total price for it. And I think you'll see how affordable it was. So we booked this package that they puzzlingly call Three Magical Days, even though it consists of a 2-night hotel accommodation and 2 days of park tickets. Still can't figure out
because you got to wake up the next day one way or the other.
I guess. Yeah. So anyway, it includes, you know, 2 nights at the hotel, breakfast at the hotel every day, which turned out to be at their like top of the line character meal.
Oh, buffet. Wow. So we're not talking continental breakfast.
Yeah. It was not a continental breakfast. This was like easily $100 meal for all three of us each day.
Nice.
Early check-in, late check-out, transportation to and from the airport, admission to the park for all of us for 2 days, a meal coupon good in the parks each day for each of us, photo pass for 2 days, and reserved viewing area for the parades and the fireworks. So in the U.S., you could imagine something like this would cost a pretty penny, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking about, you know, your whole package there of hotel tickets, at least a partial dining plan. I mean, it sounds like you've got at least 2 meal credits going on between a full breakfast and an in-park voucher as well.
Yeah, we had two meals paid every day. I mean, we had the breakfast and then we had an in-park meal. So effectively, this is an all-inclusive package.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
at least as much as you see at a Disney, you know, at a Disney theme park resort.
Yeah, it has hotel tickets, photo pass, dining. It also came with several fast passes, you know, good for use anytime. So the entire cost for this package for 2 nights at the hotel, 2 days of park tickets, yada, 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 $1,400.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all.
Although it turns out we thought this was for all three of us.
Okay, so here's the snafu, right?
$1,400. Here's where the misunderstanding comes in.
Yeah, $1,400, but somehow you have to leave May on the sidewalk?
Yeah, so their website, the booking process is very, very confusing. I don't know if this is a Western versus Eastern issue or if it was just confusion all around. You have the option when you book the package of adding on a child that gets all the same benefits, gets their own park ticket, breakfast, in-park dining, blah, blah, blah. So when you go to book the package, you can select 2 adults, 1 child, and it gives you the rate. But when you do that, you're not actually adding the child onto this package. You're still just booking the package for 2 adults, and you're adding the child to your room. So the child is there with you, but they don't get any of this other stuff, if that makes sense.
Right. In order to get the extra stuff, you then have to go back and add that separately.
Yeah, there's a screen later on where you can add various options. Like you can add on different toys for your kid, or like Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique. You can add a child to the package. But having already added the child, when you select, you know, two adults and one child at the beginning, I think the natural assumption would be that option is you're adding a second child.
Right. You're adding what we would call at Walt Disney World a day guest, right? Somebody right. who's just going to meet you there.
Well, no. I mean, when you have the option to this is – the wording is you're adding a child to the package.
Oh, okay.
But considering that you think you've already added your one child to the package,
right?
This would lead you to believe you're adding a second child. Turns out that's not the case. If you want your one child to have all these benefits, you have to add them at that point. Now, the price is really inconsequential. I mean, to add the child, I think it's only like $150 to the package.
Okay.
But it led to really big confusion when we checked in, because I'm expecting park tickets for each of us, meal tickets for each of us, all this, and they're not giving them to me.
Right.
And the language barrier was just enough. I mean, everybody there spoke great English, don't get me wrong, but the language barrier was just enough where we couldn't figure out what was going on.
Right. Because it's a technical terminology thing, right? And
yeah.
You have, you know, you're in the industry, so, you know, you think you know and understand the terminology, but it's not meaning the same thing you're used to it meaning.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here with a printout in front of me that shows, like, the Disneyland Three Magical Days Disney Getaway Package, two adults, one child. That's literally what my printout said. And I said, you know, she is booked on this package. I don't see any other way to interpret this. And they keep saying, you know, like in the price breakdown, it doesn't show a child added on. And I'm like, well, that, I don't know what that means. You know, anyway, we went back and forth for probably 45 minutes to an hour trying to figure this out. And finally, like, look, you know, I'm tired. We've had a long day. We will pick this up in the morning.
Right.
They were so, you know, apologetic, and, you know, they felt bad about this whole delay with us checking in, that we ended up needing to add a rollout bed to the room for the whole stay, which was a pretty significant cost. It was about $60-$70 a night.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I was surprised at that, given the pricing of everything else.
Sure.
But anyway, they felt so bad about the problems with check-in that they waived the fee for the rollout bed.
Oh, well, that was nice.
For the entire stay, which... you know, that's nothing to sneeze at. It's probably like $300 right there.
Well, yeah. And, you know, to me, the biggest thing about that is that it shows a consistency with what we expect from sort of Disney brand service, right? I mean, this is the way that kind of thing gets handled, because it's not even like you went to them demanding compensation. It's just a matter of them saying, you know, there was hassle. It didn't need to be a hassle. We're going to do something to, you know, special to brighten their day a little bit.
Sure. And as soon as we got into the room, you know, I of course, I'm still obsessing about the situation, trying to figure out what is going on. I go to the website and I walk through the entire booking package. And I notice now that when you add, you know, when you select two adults, one child, and you go to like the booking screen, it specifically says this package only includes park tickets and meals for two adults and not one child. Now, I'm not going to state definitively that language wasn't there when I booked, but as you said, I'm in the industry. I look for stuff like this.
Right.
You know, I don't think it was there when I booked. I'm like 95% sure. I think there have been problems with this in the past, and they've since added that language.
Right.
But, anyway, and as soon as I saw that, and as soon as I then went and further and saw the other screen where I add the child, I compare pricing, blah, 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 I figured out, yes, it was technically my mistake.
Right.
Even though the website was misleading. So, you know, I went in the morning, you know, I explained, you know, I had figured out the problem. I added her to my package, paid the extra cost, you know, no problem.
Right.
That was the end of that.
Right.
So, you know, I just wanted to get on and enjoy the day.
Well, I mean, you just had a day of traveling, and that's always stressful, even when it's only a 2-hour flight, because you're, you know, dealing with airports and airport security and all of that. So it just makes sense that if you're going to have a miscommunication, right, that's when it's going to happen.
Yes. Yep. It's always going to happen at the most inconvenient time.
Right. So how many park days had you planned for yourself? You said 2 days that were part of this package, and you'd learned your lesson from Shanghai. You didn't try and squeeze in an extra day?
Well, there was no way to squeeze in an extra day on this one, just given when we arrived and when our flight back to the U.S. was.
Oh, okay.
I mean, popular opinion is that Hong Kong is only a one-day park anyway.
Okay.
So we were, 100% sure that 2 days would be fine.
Right.
And it ended up being that way. We did add a third night of hotel onto this package just because we needed it. We didn't want to fly back after our, last day at the park.
Right, right.
But, as I said, we started off our day with that character meal that first day. Just absolutely beautiful restaurant called the Enchanted Garden down in the basement of the hotel. Typical characters, Mickey, Minnie, Pluto, and Goofy. Very good breakfast. There wasn't anything really notable about it. Wasn't bad. It wasn't amazing. It was just, it was a great way to start off your day.
Sure.
Got lots of photo pass pictures. Speaking of photo pass, I guess that would be a good opportunity to talk about little, differences in their photo pass system versus the American parks. I got a lot of pictures taken at the character breakfast because I'm like, oh, with our package, photo pass is included. Well, it turns out Hong Kong Disneyland has two different photo pass products. They have in-park photo pass and they have hotel photo pass. And the two things are not linked in any way.
Right. And they don't overlap. They're just two separate entities.
Right. The photo pass that was included with my package was for in-park only. So if I wanted to get these photo pass pictures from my character meals, which of course I did,
right,
I had to pay an additional daily photo pass fee, which thinking back on it could be why they include this meal in the package.
Right, right.
Right. And the in-park photo pass options are very, very limited. I wouldn't pay for in-park photo pass if I had to. I think there are maybe two or three ride photos in the entire parks. There's a couple of character meet and greets where you could have pictures taken, but that's it. In retrospect, that was not a huge, huge benefit of that package.
Okay.
But anyway, we have the meal. We plan to arrive to the park super early because, that's what we're used to. Park opening every day at Hong Kong Disneyland is 10 a.m., which is a little late for us.
Right.
We get there at about 9:20 and the place is just deserted.
So you're there front and center in front of the gates, wondering if, Marty Moose is going to wander out soon and say, exactly. Sorry folks, park's closed.
Yeah. I mean, there's maybe two people in line in front of us. It was a little funny. And we start to realize, I've read everything about this park being a lot more laid back. And I immediately realized, this is how it's going to be. We walk through security and, in Shanghai, security was just an ordeal. It was like a 20 to 30 minute line every day. And in Hong Kong, we just breeze through in about 20 seconds. They, give a cursory glance in our backpack and that's about it.
Okay.
But they open the park about 20 minutes before, I'll put rope drop in air quotes, which I'll come back to later.
Okay.
They let you go in and explore Main Street a little bit. And, I've heard a lot about how Hong Kong's Main Street and Castle were very, very much just a carbon copy of Disneyland in California.
Okay.
And I was, in my head, I was prepared for that, but it was a little eerie walking in to what I knew was a different park. And it just looked identical to the castle in Disneyland and Main Street in Disneyland. It was a little weird.
Yeah.
We go up to where a very slight crowd has started to gather. And, this is why I put rope drop in air quotes earlier. There isn't even a rope holding you back. There's literally just a line of tape on the ground, like they would put down for a parade or something.
Right.
And maybe one cast member standing there, and everybody's just waiting. You know, nobody is like trying to move beyond this line. And in America, in an American park, wow, that would never fly. There has to be something there holding people back. You've seen it.
Yeah, right, right.
So anyway, at 10 o'clock, you know, they have a little, you know, opening ceremony. They pick a family of the day to kind of cut the ribbon for the day to open.
Okay.
And everybody just saunters in, you know, nobody runs.
But so no luck being the Westerners at the gates, you know, 2 hours in advance.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how they picked the family, but I was a little surprised they didn't approach us. So we, you know, 10 o'clock rolls around. We, wander down through the castle, wander into a completely deserted fantasy land. I mean, it was just eerie being in a fantasy land that empty.
Okay.
Looks very much like Fantasyland at Disneyland. Has a lot of the same rides, has, totally blanking now, has a carousel there, has, Mickey's PhilharMagic, like the Magic Kingdom.
Okay.
Has the teacups.
Does Hong Kong have Small World?
Hong Kong does have Small World, okay. Unlike Shanghai.
Right.
We were joking around. We were comparing the kind of the classic rides at either park. If you combine both parks, you get just about all the classic rides, but none of them overlap. It's like Hong Kong has its Small World, Space Mountain, Jungle Cruise. Shanghai does not have any of those, but it has Peter Pan, you know, a couple of others that are escaping me right now.
Okay.
It's a little funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, their version of It's a Small World, very similar to the Magic Kingdom version.
Sure.
And, you know, version where you get on the boats outside and everything. Pretty much the same ride as we're all used to, I would say. Interesting American section where it's a little more elaborate than the American sections we would get at our parks, just because to them, America is a foreign land. So
well, sure.
There's like a very nice, a Statue of Liberty, section.
Right. Right. Because just like for us, you know, you need certain landmarks and things to identify the country that's supposed to be represented, you know, they got to do the opposite on their side.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And, Fantasyland, well, we probably breezed through it in, you know, a half an hour just because there was nobody there.
Right.
Trying to take a look what else is in there. Oh yeah, they have Dumbo, of course. That is the one classic ride that did overlap. Now that I'm looking between both parks, they both had Dumbo.
Okay. Everybody gets Dumbo.
Everybody gets a Dumbo. Let's see. They had a... Oh, they have a really cool show in Fantasyland called Mickey and the Wondrous Book, which, just like you might suspect by the name, it's very similar to Mickey and the Magical Map at Disneyland.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. So
yeah, it's not identical by any means, but it's about Mickey kind of finding this magical book and working his way through it. And they, you know, Olaf is a major character, and they kind of go on this journey through the different stories in the book that takes them, of course, to different musical numbers from different Disney movies. And, you know, same general premise, but all the songs were different. The characters were different. So it wasn't like a carbon copy for sure.
Right. Now, was the story told in English or in Chinese?
It was a good mix of both.
Interesting.
The songs were all in Chinese. I mean, sorry, in English. About half of the spoken parts were in English and half were Chinese. I never made sense of why some was Chinese and some was English.
Right, so there's no consistent pattern of why something was in English when something else was in Chinese and vice versa.
I'm sure there was. I just never picked up on it. it was very interesting just hearing, you know, these classic characters that you know speaking in Chinese, you know, with the accent or with the voices that you know.
Right,
like,
right.
It's interesting, you know, Goofy was a major character in the show and he was always, you know, calling for Mickey or something. But in Chinese, somehow when you translate Mickey's name, it's not pronounced Mickey. It's pronounced almost like Mikey.
Okay. So just because of the sounds of the vowels and things.
Yeah, yeah. So he's always saying like, oh, Mikey. You know, it was just, it made me laugh almost every time I heard it just because it was so different.
Right, right. Makes sense.
Yeah. So Fantasyland, you know, that kind of finished it off. Very small. We didn't come back to that a whole lot just because it was so similar to the Fantasylands in the American parks.
Right, right.
One thing that's interesting about Hong Kong, you know, we went to move on to Toy Story Land after we were done with Fantasyland because it's one of the few parks where Toy Story Land is already there and right. done. And it wasn't open yet. And really? We're like, what? What's going on? It's not open. They opened the park land by land.
Oh, you know, Walt Disney World used to do that in the Magic Kingdom. Frontierland would open, you know, an hour later than the rest of the park.
Oh, okay. So they open. I know they do that at Disneyland. You know, that's the way with Toontown.
Okay, yeah.
Which, right. you know, I was used to. But this is like every land. I mean, they open Fantasyland at 10 o'clock. Then I think Toy Story Land and a couple of the other very minor lands at 10:30. And then Grizzly Gulch and Tomorrowland at 11.
Oh, wow. So it is this whole phased opening of the whole park.
Yeah. They just go in this big circle around the park. And it's the same way at night. They close them down one by one.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's kind of bizarre.
It was a little strange. Yeah.
I don't think I would like that at all because I think I would get really frustrated about the fact that it would make it difficult to do much sort of touring planning to avoid crowds because they're basically shepherding the crowd.
Well, you know, I would add that if there were any crowds, yeah, that would be an issue.
Okay. So the issue was that there just weren't crowds to speak of.
And I have, you know, I'm just making a wild guess here that that may play into why they do it this way because they just want to funnel everybody into Fantasyland right. so they can cut down on employees for a while.
Of course. You know,
because there's so few people when the park opens. If they were dispersed over every land, it would be, you know, completely empty.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, so we, you know, just piddled around Fantasyland a little more, did a little shopping. And then we move over to Toy Story Land, which I was really excited to see just because it was a completely new land for me. The rides over there are not the most thrilling. They're pretty much just off-the-shelf carnival rides, kind of right. with a Toy Story layover. Kind of like I would equate it very much. In fact, I equate the entire land very much to Bugs Land, a California Adventure.
That was exactly what I was thinking too. Yeah.
Great theming, an insane amount of theming. It looks beautiful, but the rides are very much just, you know, off the shelf, nothing exciting. There are three rides. There is Slinky's Toy Story, Slinky Dog Spin, which is just the standard Twister. Is that the right? Yeah, Twister ride. You would find at any park.
Right. Yeah, the spinner ride.
Spinner ride, yeah. You know, and it's just got a slinky dog thing around it, so he looks like he's chasing his tail the whole time. Yeah, my daughter loved it, but it's nothing we ever went back to.
Right.
They have RC Racers, which is kind of the roller coaster that is just on the big U track, and it goes, you know, up one branch of the U and goes back down backwards right. and goes back up the other branch.
Yeah, that's the big, you know, attraction that's supposed to be coming to Walt Disney World's version of Toy Story Land here shortly, I believe.
Yeah, and it's also coming to, I didn't even realize this was being built, but they're also doing it at Shanghai. We could see
right.
it being
built. Yeah, they just announced that, like, within the last few weeks, so it may not have even been official while you were there.
Okay. I'd be surprised if it wasn't, because, I mean, it was very obvious. I mean, we could see it. Yeah, we could see it sticking up above. It was almost done.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm misremembering then.
And then the third ride was Toy Story. Sorry, I keep saying Toy Story. The Green Army Men parachute drop, which I didn't have high expectations for. I figured it would be just like Jumpin' Jellyfish at California Screamin'. I mean, at California Adventure, which it kind of is, but it's probably about three times as large. It's pretty tall, so it adds a little bit of thrill to the ride, at least.
Right. And I think that's the other one that is that's going to be part of Toy Story Land and Walt Disney World. And I'm second guessing myself about RC Racer, but I think we're getting both RC Racer and the parachute drop in addition to Slinky Dog.
If I recall, I think it's right. I think it's pretty much the exact same three rides there.
Right.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, the amount of theming in this land is fantastic. I mean, it does a great job of making you feel like you're shrinking down to toy size, just like Bugs Land does, making you feel like you're shrinking down.
Right.
I believe, if I remember correctly, this is the one place in the park you could find a churro. So we visited there a lot. Because my daughter, you know, has to have at least one churro a day.
I'm sure it's the vacation diet.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this is not a land where you're going to spend a lot of time just because of the limited amount of rides. But it was definitely cool to see it. And once you get done with Toy Story Land, it kind of leads right naturally into probably what is the smallest land in the park, but one of the coolest. It's called, let me pull up my map here. I want to make sure I get the name right. It's called Mystic Point.
Okay, so this is Mystic Point. So I'm going to jump in here and say that I'm betting that Mystic Point would be home of the Mystic Manor attraction that people were buzzing about when it opened as Hong Kong's version of Haunted Mansion, so to speak.
You are exactly right. That is the one and only ride in Mystic Point. And I will say there are some very like superficial resemblances to Haunted Mansion, just in the sense that it takes place in a big mansion. And it's a ride through, almost on an Omnimover. Not really an Omnimover. It's more of a trackless vehicle type system. But other than that, I'd hesitate to call this their equivalent of Haunted Mansion. It's not really scary in any way. Mm-hmm. It's not intended to be scary. Other than you're riding through this big house looking at things, that would be where the similarity ends to me.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think my understanding is that some of that was intentional, that when they did some sort of playtest type stuff with Haunted Mansion in China, what they found was that, frankly, they had a hard time doing it and having people not find it just terribly offensive. They didn't find it entertaining at all.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I didn't do a ton of research into this, but I guess in the Chinese culture, they have a very, very different view of the afterlife and what happens to people after they die.
Right.
And Haunted Mansion just does not translate into that at all.
Yeah.
And so they came up with this, you know, kind of pseudo replacement, that I guess is supposed to take its place. And this ride is just, you know, I know how much I raved about Pirates of the Caribbean in Shanghai. I will rave almost as much about this in Hong Kong.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It is a great ride. Just to give you a concept of what it's about. It's about a man, his name is escaping me right now, but this man is an explorer and he's gone exploring the entire world, collecting artifacts. And he has brought them to his home, and he's built this museum inside his home with all these artifacts from all over the world, you know, through his explorations. And one of the artifacts he has collected is a magical music box that, if it's opened, will bring inanimate objects to life. He also happens to have as his sidekick a little pet monkey named Albert, who my daughter just instantly fell in love with and just talks about nonstop. That was her. You know, she gets to pick one souvenir to bring home on every ride. She had to get on every trip.
Every ride gets awfully expensive.
Yeah, that would be a lot of luggage coming home. So she had to get a stuffed Albert once we got off that ride, and that was her one souvenir for the trip. So that's how much she loved this guy. But anyway, this mischievous little monkey, Albert, of course, in the very first room, opens the music box, bringing the entire museum to life. And you just ride through on this track, like I said, trackless system, so you really don't know where you're going to go on your first ride through. Observing the different rooms, there's a music room with all these different musical instruments that come to life. There's an armor room, where armor and weapons room, where suits of armor come to life. Different weapons look mildly threatening, like they're going to shoot you or whatever. Okay. I don't want to give a run through of the whole ride here, but that's the general concept.
Right.
And it's just one of those rides that is so amazingly themed that it just completely immerses you in the ride. You totally buy into it. And as soon as you get off, you want to ride it again.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like to me the part that really strikes me as you describe it is that it's not just, a string of cool effects, but that they have strung together a story that they're conveying here and that the story works.
It totally works. And another cool thing about the story for people that know Disney pretty well is this explorer, I just found his name online finally. His name is Lord Henry Mystic, hence Mystic Manor,
right.
Is part of the Society of Explorers and Adventurers, which if you abbreviate that is SEAC,
okay,
which is what the entire concept of the Disney Sea Park in Tokyo is based on.
Okay.
The entire park is supposed to be the Society of Explorers and Adventurers have built this park. So this ties into Tokyo. There are lots of different Easter eggs kind of in the queue area for Mystic Manor that tie in. There's a portrait of Lord Harrison Hightower, who is Tokyo's version of Tower of Terror, is based on Harrison Hightower because they don't know the Twilight Zone over there. There's a portrait of legendary symphonic composer D. Elfman, who I'm sure you can decipher. Yes. Danny Elfman, who I guess also did the music for this ride. Just lots of little Easter eggs like that if you pay attention. Super right. Cool. I picked something out new on probably every time through that queue, and I went through that queue a lot. We probably rode this at least 6 or 7 times our 2 days there. And my wife got to the point, she's like, you guys just go. I'm not doing it.
I'll be over here.
Yeah. And, surprisingly, just like Pirates at Shanghai, there is very, very rarely a line for this. Only when the park gets super crowded does a line get over like 5 or 10 minutes.
Interesting.
It's just, don't know why.
So no major lines, rode several times, loved the attraction. Sounds like it was probably the highlight attraction-wise of Hong Kong, yeah?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no question. And, I kind of expected it to be. This is the one ride there that, when you do any research on Hong Kong, it's the one ride that gets mentioned consistently.
Right. Its reputation precedes it.
Yeah. And it totally lives up to its reputation, unlike a lot of things.
Okay.
But other than that, at Mystic Point, there's not a whole lot. It's just one of those areas that's really cool to explore. They have this little garden area that has several kind of optical illusions, like you look through a little keyhole viewer or something, and you can see 3 different statues that when you look at a certain angle through the keyhole, they become one, and just 4 or 5 different things you can look at through there. My daughter really got into that a lot. Very small land, but a very cool land. And that leads us right into Grizzly Gulch, which is right next to it, which is pretty much their equivalent to Frontierland. It's a very Western-themed land. I would almost say it's a cross between Frontierland at Disneyland and, what's the latest name for it at California Adventure? Grizzly Peak?
Right, yeah, Grizzly Peak. Yep.
Grizzly Peak, because it's very wooded and mountainous. And in fact, one of the rides there has a mountain sticking right up through the middle of it that very, very much looks like Grizzly Peak.
Oh, okay.
On top of Grizzly River Rapids. Just a little more stylized, so it's not as immediately recognized.
I'm trying to think. I want to say that that's supposed to be modeled on the Thunder Mesa concept that was originally done for Magic Kingdom.
Oh, it could be. It very well could be.
Because is there Big Thunder Mountain Railroad there?
There is not, but there's a ride very similar.
Okay.
their version of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad is called, let me find it here. I'm using a paper map right now, which is a little unusual for me.
And a little awkward called, when you're trying to record.
Yeah. Big Grizzly Mountain Runaway Mine Cars.
Okay.
And thematically, it's very, very similar to Big Thunder Mountain. You're on these runaway mine cars going through a, you know, mountain that is also a mine. The concept is that there are these grizzly bears are kind of wreaking havoc inside the mine. They're setting off different explosives.
Okay.
If you haven't ridden it before, the big surprise is that it's also very, very similar to Expedition Everest. And then about halfway through the ride,
you get that track switch.
The track switches, you're going backwards. And then you know, after a minute or so of backwards, you get to what you think is the end of the ride. But no, it's just the bear is setting off more explosives that shoot you forward through, you know, a third part of the ride. And it's a very impressive roller coaster. I'd put it right up there with Big Thunder Mountain for sure.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like almost even, you know, to me, Big Thunder Mountain is a pretty basic roller coaster. I mean, it's your basic sort of, you know, lean hard to the side kind of thing coaster and nice theming, but not a whole lot else. And this one sounds like it's got a variety of different sort of theming elements that take it to another level.
Yeah. Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I think you're right. It does have some really nice thrill ride elements that are added to it to just kind of punch it up a level. From Big Thunder Mountain. Yeah, the going backwards, I wish they didn't give that away. Like, when you can see it, you know, like when you're walking by the ride. It would be nice if that was just a total surprise.
But, sure.
You know, I understand logistics are what they are. They can't hide the whole ride.
Yeah.
And really, that's about it for Grizzly Gulch. You know, most of these lands, as you can probably infer so far, are pretty tiny. The last two have only really had one ride. In each of them.
Yeah.
Grizzly Gulch had the mine cars, and Mystic Point had Mystic Manor. The next land is a little bigger, but not much. It's pretty big size-wise. It's their version of Adventureland. And the first thing when you cross into Adventureland that you see is their theater for Festival of the Lion King. Which is, you know, interesting to see in Adventureland. You know, I'm only used to seeing it at Animal Kingdom. I managed somehow to keep this one a secret from my daughter, who is just absolutely obsessed with The Lion King. So as soon as she saw this, she just lost her freaking mind. Because that is one of the few things, you know, she was pretty young the last time we went to Disney World. It's probably been 3-4 years.
Right.
And that's one of the few things she remembers from our trip is Festival of the Lion King, just because she loved it so much. So we had to sit through that one, you know, a couple times. That's another, you know, benefit we got from our package is that we got reserved seating for Festival of the Lion King, which was nice.
That is nice.
So we were right up front for one show. Not that it's a huge theater, you know, it's about the same size as the one in Animal Kingdom. So, you know, anywhere in there is a good seat.
Sure.
But let's see, what else is in Adventureland? Oh, no, back to Festival of the Lion King for a second. I don't know. Like I said, it's been several years since I've seen it. Has the version of Animal Kingdom changed any in the past few years, or is it basically the same?
The show didn't really change. They built a new theater, right? They moved the theater because the original theater was in Camp Minnie Mickey, which is now Pandora.
Right. Okay. So there are significant differences in the show itself then.
Okay.
This one is more a straight retelling of the story of the movie.
Oh, not it, more. I mean, the one at Disney's Animal Kingdom is much more of a riff on the Broadway show version a little bit.
Right. So the concept of this is Rafiki brings out, you know, Simba, adult Simba, at the beginning of the show and says, oh, we're going to have a celebration of your life. And other characters tell the story of The Lion King, basically.
Okay.
He picks, you know, other performers and actors to play the different parts. And yeah, it's very well done. No acrobat monkeys, which I was disappointed about. That's one thing I remember from the Animal Kingdom version. The monkeys that kind of swing on the acrobatic bars. Am I misremembering here?
No, I mean, yeah, no, that's definitely part of the Walt Disney World version. And okay. You know, we often call them the tumble monkeys.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, didn't have any of that. Still, it was definitely worth a watch. Great show.
Good.
And other than that, their Adventureland, like I said, it's big, but there's not a ton there. They have their version of Rivers of America, which is where their Jungle Cruise is located.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So their Jungle Cruise goes around a big island in the middle where normally would be Tom Sawyer's Island. But in Hong Kong, that's where they put Tarzan's Treehouse. And they bill it as kind of the big play area for kids. So you take a raft across to Tarzan's Treehouse. Problem with that is, you know, you have to wait maybe 10, 15, busier times, 20 minutes on the raft. And Tarzan's Treehouse isn't really any bigger than it is at Disneyland.
Okay.
So it's about a 5-minute walkthrough, you know?
Right, right.
So you spend longer waiting and riding the raft each way than you do actually, you know, walking through the treehouse itself. It's not really a play area at all.
So not nearly as much sort of exploration room as Tom Sawyer's Island.
Not at all. Yeah, it's just, you know, walk up the treehouse, look at the various rooms, and walk back down, and you're done. It was, we wouldn't have gone over there if we would have known it was identical to Disneyland's version.
Yeah.
And like I said, that's the waterway there is their version of the Jungle Cruise. They have a very nice feature there that they offer the Jungle Cruise in 3 different languages. You just enter the line for whichever language you want. They have Mandarin, Cantonese, and English. And okay. So, of course, we get in the English line. Even though it's in English, I think a lot is lost. Just, I mean, obviously the Jungle Skipper is still a native Chinese speaker, and right. A lot is lost in the jokes.
Sure, sure. They it's awfully really hard to pun jokes. In a language you don't know.
Yeah, the humor was a little different than I'm used to in the Jungle Cruise. Like, they talked about the animals eating the children and things like that.
A little graphic.
Which, yeah, it was a little much. You know, it was funny, but you know, we only did it once. It is quite a different version of the Jungle Cruise. At the very end, they have this pretty intense section where the boat stops kind of between these 2 different rock formations, and they turn into what they call the God of Fire and the God of Water. Wow. And they have a battle, basically. Water and fire shooting up on one side, water shooting up on the other. And there's one point where a little section of the water actually catches on fire.
Oh, wow.
I'm assuming there's just some kind of petroleum on top of it or right, something. Right. I don't,
but wow, but, so much yeah. more of a thrill, you know, thrill show portion than we get out of any of the U.S. versions, certainly.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, the first 10 minutes or so are pretty similar to the other parks. A lot more space involved, which is nice. It doesn't feel so cramped just because it is, you know, about roughly equivalent the size of the Rivers of America. But then, you know, I think it gives them the space to add this extra little section at the end, which is pretty cool.
Right.
And that kind of polishes off Adventureland, which is not that large. And then there's only one land left, which is the smallest version of Tomorrowland I've ever seen.
Okay.
It's you walk in and you very much feel like you're in the Tomorrowland of other parks. There's the big their version of Astro Orbiter right there in the middle of the entryway.
Right. Everybody pretty much has one of those.
Yeah, they have some version of that. You have Space Mountain directly to your left, which is a little unusual it being over there. I'm used to it on the right. But then you go to walk further in and you basically realize that's it. You're at the end of Tomorrowland.
Okay.
There's one more ride kind of right there that blocks the way. They have one of the more cool rides in the park called the Iron Man Experience, which is very, very similar to Star Tours. It's exactly the same ride vehicles, just with an Iron Man theme instead.
Okay. So it's your basic, you know, simulator kind of thing, but it's an Iron Man theme.
Yeah, yeah, just a big motion simulator. The concept is that Tony Stark has designed this this vehicle called the Battle Wing, which accompanies him into combat, and it's supposed to be taking you on a tour over Hong Kong, where a new Stark Tower has just been built. And of course, it's not just the tour; lots of things go wrong.
Of course,
and
we did a whole show on that once. Oh no, something went wrong.
Yeah. And Iron Man comes to fight alongside you, and of course, you save the day. And yeah, it's just as enjoyable as Star Tours. Probably doesn't have quite the broad appeal, just because, you know, I think Star Wars has a broader appeal than Iron Man.
Sure.
But definitely a respectable entry for any Tomorrowland, I would think. And right when you get off of, I almost called it Star Tours, right when you get off of Iron Man Experience, they have a little section of the park called the Stark Expo, which is a little shop selling all kinds of superhero merchandise. But then it also has a meet and greet for Iron Man, which is really cool because, to my knowledge, I don't think Iron Man meets in any other Disney park.
Well, no. I mean, he can't meet in any of the U.S. parks because... Yeah,
He could meet in
Disneyland, but he would be difficult to promote in Disneyland.
And why is that?
Because they still, even if they put him there, they can't use Marvel with him. It has to do with marketing restrictions because, I mean, I guess theoretically they could, but they'd have to be very careful about where the advertisements went because they can't advertise Marvel's anything.
Oh, can't east of advertise it. East of, oh, yeah, I yep. gotcha. Yeah. Okay. I was trying to get the distinction because, I mean, right. they have Captain America and Spider-Man there. Right. But they
have to be real careful about how they, you know, how they refer to them.
Yeah. So they could probably just have like a meet and greet because that wouldn't really be advertised at all.
And that's how they've gotten away with little things like the limited time Doctor Strange meet and greet in Hollywood Studios even.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. And it was the Iron Man meet and greet was really cool. They take you into this little area where, you know, they're scanning you for security and everything. And then they take you into what is supposed to be an exhibit at Stark Tower. And they're telling you all about the weapons. And all of a sudden, you know, boom, Iron Man enters unexpectedly. And you get to meet him. It reminded me a whole lot of the Thor meet and greet that they used to have at Disneyland. I don't know if you ever got to experience that or not. But it was just a little more than a typical meet and greet.
Right. No, we didn't get to do it. And I was bummed because actually we were all primed to do it. And then all of a sudden my son got shy and didn't want to.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But it was just, you know, it wasn't just waiting in line to meet a character, which I thought was really cool. There were just some other added elements to go along with it. And that was one of the few places where we did get some photo pass pictures taken. So at least we got a little bit of money's worth out of that photo pass that's included right. in our package. Hilariously, one of the other places that they do take photo pass pictures in the park, I mentioned there are only a couple of ride pictures. One of them is on the Winnie the Pooh ride in Fantasyland.
Okay.
Woohoo, thrilling, right?
Now, and is this another one where it's essentially the same Winnie the Pooh ride as Magic Kingdom?
Yeah, it's identical to Magic Kingdom.
So no scrambling car, honey hunt type thing, just the basic
story. The basic ride. And we got the most hilarious ride photo taken on Winnie the Pooh. This was not planned. I just did not know there was going to be a picture taken. My daughter is sitting in the car in front of us. You know, it's a two-row vehicle, so she's in front.
It's the same one as the Magic Kingdom one.
Yeah, she is. My daughter's just all excited, thrilled to be on the ride, has just this look of utter, you know, elation on her face. And my wife and I are just sitting in the back seat with our arms crossed, just bored out of our minds. I mean, I'm literally like looking off to the side like I'm asleep. And I posted this picture to Facebook, and people are saying, you have to use this for your Christmas card this year. That is how awesome that picture is. So inadvertently, we got a really awesome ride picture out of Winnie the Pooh.
There you go. Never know where it's coming from.
Yeah. But the one other place they do take a ride picture is on Space Mountain, which I mentioned a couple of minutes ago. They have what looks to be a permanent hyperspace mountain overlay.
Very nice.
I guess permanent and overlay kind of contradict each other, but you sure, know what I mean. Right.
It looks like a retheme there as opposed to simply an overlay.
Yeah, they have a pretty permanent looking signs when you enter Tomorrowland that say, like, you know, Star Wars takes over Tomorrowland. And then inside the queue for Hyperspace Mountain, there's like a full size X-Wing fighter mock-up. It's a very compact version of Space Mountain, it seems like. It doesn't have like just the size and the heft like you're used to when you see it in other Tomorrowlands. When you ride it, it's not quite as fast as the other Space Mountains. I don't know if they cut a few corners here or whatever. The strangest thing about it is it's not completely dark. Somehow there's a little light coming in. You can actually see the track.
Interesting.
Takes a lot away from it, I bet. I'm sure you can imagine. It actually helped me because I get motion sickness really badly. And Space Mountain, for one, is one that really sets off my motion sickness, specifically because I can't see where I'm going.
Right, you know, right.
Body's not ready for it. So just being able to see the track a little bit helped me out.
Right. So should we just not talk about Rock and Roller Coaster?
I've never been on it.
Well, that's what I figured.
Not really. The only reason I've never been on it is because last time we went to Disney World, my daughter was not tall enough for it.
Oh, right. Yeah. I'm just imagining, you know, if that's the case, upside down in the dark may not be your best option.
I did not know it did that. So, yeah, good note to have.
Several times.
So, yeah, Space Mountain. It was Space Mountain and Iron Man are Tomorrowland's big attractions over there, and their version of Orbitron. Don't remember what it's called here. Let me see. Oh, it is called Orbitron. They have their version of Jedi training over there, which we didn't bother with because it was all in Mandarin, of course.
Sure.
So didn't figure that would be a good investment of time for my daughter.
Sure.
They have a couple cool meet and greets over there. You can meet either Chewbacca or BB-8. Which was nice. I know you guys get to meet BB-8 over at Hollywood Studios, I think, but yeah. We don't get him over at Disneyland. So that was a nice one for my daughter. And that kind of really brief tour of Hong Kong Disneyland brings it to a close. It is
because that's all there is.
A small park.
So here's where we're getting to sort of the next overall resort set of questions, because we talked at the end there or at the beginning of the show about the overall show stuff that happened at Shanghai. So what kind of shows did you see at Hong Kong?
Okay. So other than the Mickey and the Wondrous Book and Lion King, which I already talked about,
right?
Their major shows, they have two parades. So they're already 100% up on Shanghai. They have an afternoon parade, which is, give me a second here, I'll find it with the rustling papers. The Flights of Fantasy Parade takes place in the afternoon. Honestly, I don't remember that this theme had any overlying concept.
Okay.
Other than just, you know, a bunch of Disney characters.
Right.
We had reserved seating for that, like I said. Turns out we didn't need it. We got to the reserved section. Probably 10 minutes before the parade started, and we were literally the only ones in there. Yeah, and about 5 minutes before, a few other people showed up. But, you know, I don't remember a lot about this parade.
Right, so just it wasn't particularly memorable is what that tells me.
Yeah, exactly. If it was bad, I would remember it. If it was great, I would remember it. But
right, but it's sort of there.
Yeah, the big parade there is their nighttime parade. They're the originators of Paint the Night,
right?
Which is still there. Okay. And pretty much identical to the version they brought to Disneyland, which I was super happy to see because that is my all-time favorite parade that I've ever seen at any Disney park. And it's not at Disneyland at the present moment. So right.
It's been sort of on hiatus at Disneyland.
Yep, supposedly coming back in a few months to California Adventure, but we'll see.
Right.
I don't know if it'll be the same.
Right.
The reserved section for that was super nice to have. It still wasn't, you know, super crowded for the parade, but it was just nice having a little section where we were spread out. You know, it wasn't crowded. We didn't have to worry about people bumping into us. Yeah, I mean, if you've seen Paint the Night at Disneyland or seen videos of it, you know what this parade is like. It's amazingly impressive. Still has that great Mack semi float from Cars, which is just huge.
Right.
And their other nighttime entertainment is their fireworks, which is called... Give me a second. Of course, I just closed the map. It's called Disney and the Stars. We did stay in the park for that primarily because, again, we had the reserved section. The reserved section for that was literally right at the center of the hub. It's like, you know, you would see the reserved seating for the VIP tours at Disneyland or Magic Kingdom.
Right.
It was that prime. And we came out of that. It was super impressive. My wife declared it the best fireworks she's ever seen.
Wow.
Yeah, which surprised me.
Yeah, compared to Shanghai, where you were just desperately underwhelmed.
Yeah. The all the entertainment options at Hong Kong, to me, blew away Shanghai and most other parks, I think. They're really on their game as far as entertainment goes.
Okay.
I'd be hard pressed to tell you any specific thing about the fireworks other than they were impressive.
Right. You know, now, did they do the same sort of, you know, impressive fireworks and projection and that kind of thing? Or was this more of truly a old fashioned fireworks show?
There were some projections. They weren't quite as extensive just from the fact that the castle is so much smaller.
Okay.
You know, yeah. There's just not as much surface area there to project on. Yeah, so it definitely focused more on the fireworks. This will kind of give you an idea of the crowds. This was a crowded day at Hong Kong. When the fireworks ended, we were out the front gate in 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And we were at the hub.
Okay. Yikes.
So, yeah, not only did kind of lost track there. I mean, not only were the fireworks more impressive, but they just had crowd control, you know, down a little better.
Well, so I'm glad you mentioned it that way, because that's exactly what I was just going to ask you about, which is whether your impression was that, you know, quickly getting out like that was a matter of a low crowd level or just really well done crowd management.
You know what? The more I'm thinking about it, I think it was probably due to lower crowds. I don't recall seeing anybody really guiding people where to go.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I think, due to, you know, it just not being as crowded.
Right.
I got to say, though, there was one point another day in Hong Kong. They have right in the middle of Town Square at the front of Main Street, they had a giant Christmas tree. And every night at 6 o'clock, I guess they had a tree lighting, which was fairly popular. Well, we were trying to leave the park right at 6 o'clock. And just the way they had this set up, we were in this just massive sea of people and literally could not move. There was no way to escape. I was actually a little scared.
Yikes.
I mean, I couldn't move and I was freaking out. I don't get claustrophobic.
Right, right. But you were pinned in enough that you made you nervous.
And this is just something that I don't feel like would happen in most Disney parks. They would think about the logistics of what they're doing and where they're placing things to accommodate the crowd.
But you know what? I've felt somewhat of that kind of thing on both coasts in the United
Have
States.
You? Okay. I feel like at Disneyland in California, they would at least have very narrow walkways roped off behind kind of the crowd so that people could get by. There was none of that. I mean, they were crowded from storefront to storefront, and you just had to force your way through.
Yeah. I mean, I would see in the U.S., they would do it. Disney would do it. And then, unfortunately, there would be obnoxious guests who would ignore it.
Who would just stop. Yeah. Stop and stand there anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really the only negative thing I could think of crowd-wise that happened at Hong Kong. Overall, the crowds were just so low.
Yeah.
I mentioned when I was talking about our package, they gave us a bunch of fast passes to use anytime we wanted. We had 9 for our whole trip, which doesn't seem like a lot when you're there for 2 days. We, on our last night, we gave away 3 of them because we hadn't.
Just because they weren't necessary.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the most lines we got on were no more than 10 or 15 minutes. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to use a fast pass for that. You know, maybe later it'll be longer. And of course, right. It never was.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, this is the thing I've noticed more recently at Walt Disney World. And I'm sure it's different for me now because I've been to the parks multiple times. And so I'm less, you know, feeling less pressure to see everything each time. But I catch myself now sometimes deciding to take a standby line, even if I could use a fast pass, just because I feel like there are so many attractions now where you miss some of the attraction by missing the queue.
I agree. Yeah. In fact, I meant to mention this in last week's edition of Shanghai. When you go on Pirates there, there's a section where the line splits. And I very quickly figured out that one line moved faster than the other, just to the logistics of the way the line was set up. Uh-huh. And like the last 2 times I went on the ride, I'm like, oh no, we're going in the long one. I just want to see what's over there. Because it was still only, you know, 10 minutes versus 5 minutes. So right, wasn't like a huge difference. But yeah, I get exactly what you mean. There are some lines that are worth seeing.
Right.
Yeah, I think unless you can think of anything else, that may just finish off. Okay. Oh, food.
Food. Yeah, we talked about, you know, just a little bit about food, but give us the overview on food in Hong Kong and maybe in particular how it compared to your options in Shanghai.
We were pretty limited in where we were able to eat because of the food vouchers that we have were only usable at certain restaurants. It turned out, you know, it looked like a pretty limited number of restaurants. It turns out it was limited just because there were a limited number of restaurants. Yeah, I think there was only one restaurant they weren't good at.
Okay,
but you know, again, like I mentioned at Shanghai, Asian food is not my thing. So we found one restaurant we really, really liked, and we stuck with it.
Okay.
There's this restaurant that's actually attached to Mystic Manor, called I think it's called Mystic Hall or Mystic Point. And they had a very, very nice – I mean, since the concept is that of the ride is that this explorer has traveled all over the world collecting all these artifacts, the restaurant kind of follows the same theme. It had cuisine from all over the world. You just got in a line for which type you wanted, you know. And then the most impressive thing about this restaurant, in addition to the food being really good, is there were 4 or 5 different dining rooms. And each one was themed after a different area of the world. There was a China room, there was an India room, there was a Morocco room, and they were just all beautiful. They were super impressive. We went back to that restaurant just to walk around through all the rooms and take a look. That's how pretty it was. But other than that and the hotel breakfast, the only other food experience we had there was probably the one we were looking forward to the most, which you've seen my pictures of. There is a restaurant at the Disneyland Hotel called the Crystal Lotus, which is kind of their high-end restaurant.
Right, and this is your dim sum place, right?
Yes. They have a regular menu. You can also go to this restaurant and order dim sum. Or on Sunday afternoons only, they have what's called the Disney Dim Sum, where you can get little dim sum dishes that are modeled after Disney characters. You have to make an advance reservation for this. You have to actually order your food 48 hours in advance because I guess these take so long to make. Just an example of some of the things we had. We had little steamed pork buns that looked like the Three Little Pigs. We had steamed vegetable buns that looked like the green aliens from Toy Story. We had Baymax buns. It was just such an impressive meal, even for me that does not like Chinese food. it's definitely, I think, the prettiest meal I've ever had. Maybe you can get some pictures and post them along with the podcast.
Right, I'm planning on it.
Okay, great. it was just super fun. Anybody going to Hong Kong, I think that is a must do. It's just something I don't think you could do at any other park anywhere.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I saw those pictures you posted, and I mean, some of those were absolutely amazing. I will admit there were a few that were kind of scary.
Yeah. Olaf looked a little, deformed.
Maybe. Yeah. A little creepy. You know, but
although my daughter, there were actually two Olafs, and my daughter had pulled them apart. So that might be why.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, the Baymax looked really cool. He's pretty, pretty simple, but cool.
Mm-hmm. It was great. Hong Kong questions you can think
well, and
of.
You mentioned a little bit that there were at least a few more snack options in Hong Kong than you'd found in Shanghai. Churros, were there other snacks, or is this just a Chinese culture thing that they don't do much snacking?
Yeah, I think it's just a Chinese culture thing. Other than the churros, there were not a lot of snack options. There was the occasional popcorn stand, just like at Shanghai.
Right.
But that's about it. Yeah, snacking, just not a big thing there.
Okay. And then you're heading back, I assume, private transfer, or did you use resort transportation back to the airport?
No, we used the resort transportation there, too.
Right, okay. So any other interesting bits about the ride home? I know you had a little bit of a quirk when you finally got back to the U.S., but...
What was that? I'm forgetting.
Or maybe that was in Canada, where you got back and then you accidentally went back out.
Oh, yeah, we... You know, of course, the flight from China over back to the U.S. is very, very long. We had an 11-hour flight back to Vancouver, where we had a short layover. Well, we took a wrong turn when we got off of our plane in Vancouver and accidentally left the secure zone at the airport and went into baggage claim. So we had to go all the way back around through security, through customs, all that, just so we could... And we wait on our flight to back to the U.S., which, you know, wasn't a huge deal. We had like a 5-hour layover anyway.
Okay.
It's not like we were pressed for time.
Right, right.
But it was just annoying after.
Sure. But if you'd had a shorter layover, it could have been an issue.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah. But we also have, when we decided to take this trip, we all sprang for the global entry cards, which will...
Makes the whole process go faster.
Customs quicker. So we didn't have to go through real customs. We just had to, go to a kiosk and scan our fingerprints and bam, we're through.
Right.
But
nice.
It wouldn't have been a problem even if we had to have gone through the regular line. It was fairly short there. But,
right. Well, so it sounds like it's time to do our grand wrap up pieces. And I guess we'll do a sub piece here for Hong Kong first because I don't want it to get lost in the shuffle compared to Shanghai. Although, spoiler alert, based on our conversations, I don't think it will be. what are the things specific, just considering Hong Kong, that are the one or two things that are going to be those most enduring memories of the Hong Kong trip?
One obviously is going to be Mystic Manor. That was just such an impressive ride, unlike anything that I've seen in any other Disney park. That is probably in one of my top five Disney rides of all time.
Yeah.
And what else? I would say the Disneyland Hotel at Hong Kong. You know, even with the check-in problems, the hotel itself was amazing. We just loved walking around looking at stuff. It was so pretty. We got, I don't know if they have these at the Grand Floridian or not, but the edges of the building are kind of very turret shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And we happened to get a room right in one of those turrets, like a corner room. So the room was oversized. It was huge. It was a great experience overall at that hotel.
Okay, great. And then if you were to give somebody else who was going to take a similar trip, one bit of advice, again, specific to Hong Kong, what would be that one bit of advice?
Make sure you add your kids to the package. No,
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. I would say actually this package that I mentioned, the Three Magical Days or Nights or whatever it was called, seems to be a pretty standard offering. I've seen it there all consistently over the past year. I would say book that package if it's available and if you're going to stay at one of the Disney hotels, because it is available for all three Disney hotels at different prices. And it was just so nice having everything be all inclusive. I mean, the meal vouchers, we didn't realize it when we booked, but like having the free breakfast and the meal vouchers saved us so much money. Food and shopping overall was quite a bit more expensive in Shanghai than it was. I mean, sorry, in Hong Kong than it was Shanghai, surprisingly.
So maybe, you know, stepping back just a little bit farther and looking at the whole trip, which was a total of how long?
Total of a week.
Okay, so a lot done in 1 week.
Yeah, for sure.
So the first thing I want to ask is there one thing that out of the whole trip is going to be the thing that says, you know, China trip 2017?
Wow. That's a big one. The whole trip was so big.
Right.
I would say... Pirates of the Caribbean.
For sure. Okay. Pirates and Shanghai.
That's how impressive that ride was.
Okay. And then the next question is, when you put this whole trip together, you kind of had a vision in your head of what you wanted to do, how you wanted to come together. If you had it to do over, what would be the one thing that you might do differently?
I would say, allow more time for the trip. Okay. It wasn't really an option in our case just because we wanted to take advantage of this Thanksgiving, you know, weekend or right, a week right. when my daughter was out of school. But we really, really disliked not having time to go explore Shanghai and go explore Hong Kong. Just like when we went to Tokyo, you know, we never left Disney property.
Right.
Same here. You know, we never got to experience these, you know, great cities that we went to.
Right.
And, you know, we'll go back someday, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, you enjoyed what I hear you. You enjoyed what you did, but it would have been nice to have had the luxury of time to do a little more.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, like best case scenario, we do the Adventures by Disney China trip and do the add-ons for Shanghai and Hong Kong at either end.
But, sure. Yeah, for yeah, that's all those folks who have, what, 3 weeks of vacation time available?
Yeah, exactly. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and then, you know, if you had a bit of advice that you think is really the most important thing for people to keep in mind, if they're looking at doing something similar, right, doing a trip where they're going to catch, you know, both parks on either end in a fairly compressed time frame, what's the most important thing to keep in mind as they're putting that trip together to make sure that they get the best experience possible?
I would say remember that this is a once-in-a-lifetime trip probably, and don't, as much as you can, don't worry about cost. We made a decision very, very early on that, you know, since this is a trip we're very likely never to do again, we weren't even going to, you know, it was Disneyland Hotel all the way. It was, you know, the best option we could find.
Right.
Without, you know, completely breaking the bank or whatever. You know, we weren't going to stay in like the Walt Disney Suite at the Disneyland Hotel or anything. But
no, but that makes sense. I mean, why obsess over $50 here or there when it is a once in a lifetime signature experience? And even if you do go back at some point, it's not going to be the same trip. It's not going to be the same kind of thing because you really had a very focused objective here.
Yes, for sure. And one other thing, I mean, this is a topic I know you and I have talked about offline, but remember that you are in somebody else's culture.
Yeah.
Don't expect it to be like America. In Shanghai in particular, they just, you know, it's a different culture. They have a very different sense of personal space, a very different sense of standing in line. For example, you know, I mentioned my wife and I were watching the parades earlier at Shanghai. This woman just decided she wanted a better view of my wife. So she just, you know, stood right in front of my wife, you know,
okay.
with no word or anything, just stood there. And so, you know, we had him, and it's just, you know, they're not being rude. It's just a different culture, and that is not rude to them. You know, it's very, very hard not to get offended and not get upset, but you just have to learn to roll with it.
Yeah. Makes sense. And that's a good thing to keep in mind, because it would be easy to allow something like that to derail the trip, to get frustrated and upset about it. If you go in with the mindset of these things may happen and roll with it, I think it helps keep them from causing your whole experience to get derailed.
Yeah. It's also, I did a bit of research about stuff before this trip like this, because a lot of us have probably heard the horror stories about how bad line cutting is in Shanghai and other things that, you know, kids may be relieving themselves in places other than the bathrooms, which thankfully we never saw. But, for example, it's also not rude to not let them do these things. It's not rude to cut in line, but it's also not rude to not let somebody cut in line.
Right.
It's just almost like a little game of one-upmanship to see
it's
how
a question
much
of whether you're going to claim your space.
Exactly. That's exactly it. For example, in the security lines in the morning where line cutting was rampant, there was this man walking around with a little, like, it looked like a gold VIP card he was flashing to people. And basically what he was doing was he was taking money from people and saying, I can get you to the front of the line. And then he was just pushing his way all the way up to the front of the line and, you know, with the people that paid him. Well, we just didn't let it happen.
Right.
We just, you know, spread out ourselves as large as we could and didn't let them by. And, you know, they, you know, raised their voices and, you know, yelled a little bit. And it's probably a good idea at this point that we didn't speak Chinese and didn't know what they were saying. But, you know, we're just like, oh, can't understand you. Sorry. And, you know, finally they just stopped. But
right, right.
It's just, you know, it's different.
It is. Very
This actually, you know, my wife and I had a discussion about this after the trip, and this actually led us, I think, to prefer Hong Kong over Shanghai overall, the park, just because even though it was a smaller park, we found it more charming. We found it to be a more enjoyable experience just from a people perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It made things difficult. I'm not going to lie.
You know, it's funny too. I almost wonder whether some of it has to do with the fact that the scale of the Hong Kong park is a little closer to your home park of Disneyland as compared to Shanghai, which maybe is, you know, it's even bigger, but, you know, is more on the scale of Magic Kingdom as opposed to Disneyland Park.
Yeah. We actually talked about that. It very well could be just because it seemed so familiar to us.
Yeah.
You know? But overall, I mean, if we ever went back to another park, it would probably be Hong Kong over Shanghai, surprisingly.
All right. Even though your beloved Pirates is at Shanghai.
Yeah, that'd be a tough one to give up, though.
Yeah, see, I mean, I had this whole thing planned out where I was going to have you pick, you know, one attraction that you could bring over with you. And I think we already know the answers.
Yeah, you already know the answer to that.
You know, I mean, obviously Pirates from Shanghai and Mystic Manor from Hong Kong.
Yeah, but what pains me is I don't see any way they ever could bring Pirates over here, because it would mean getting rid of the classic Pirates, which would never happen. Right. I don't think.
Right, because the modern the Shanghai Pirates is all built around the modern film franchise, and you know, it's like it becomes an inception point, right? Because
it's just because I don't think there would be an outrage if they tried to take the classic Pirates away.
Right. Oh, I understand that. I just meant that there's this sort of bizarre, inception point at which the movies are based on the current, on the classic attraction, but now you have an attraction based on movies.
Yeah. Like, so, life imitates art, imitates life, yeah, or vice versa.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right. So you've conquered all of Asia.
Yep.
What's up next?
Well, I've only got one left. And for anybody doing the math, they know that is Paris. So probably sometime, you know, we don't have any firm plans in place, but I have been looking at the website already. I have been looking at pricing a little bit, but sometime in the next 3 to 4 years, we will probably complete the Grand Slam of everything.
Yes, right. Right. But the Asian Grand Slam was easy because there were four total parks, but,
yeah,
you know, All right. Well, we'll look forward to hearing about Paris when that one works its way to the top of the agenda again. But thank you so much for coming on and spending a couple of days here sharing the story of your China adventure with us.
You're welcome. It was great reliving it a little bit again.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes. What delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.